passage this morning calls us to make a decision. Who do you say I am? Jesus says. A question that demands an answer. Why is it important that we think who Jesus is? Well, mainly because this book, the Bible, claims that he is God's chosen king, the Son of God, the one who created the world and everything in it, who will judge every human being, who has authority to take us to heaven or to condemn us to hell. And there are lots of good reasons to believe that this book, the Bible, is true, that Jesus is God's chosen king, the Son of God. So who we think Jesus is massively important. The passage we're looking at today is about halfway through the book of Mark, which is Mark's account of Jesus' life. And the question of who is this man has been asked right throughout the book. Everything that Jesus does seems to ask the question, who is this man? Let me give you a very brief overview of what's happened so far in Mark. Jesus was baptized by John the Baptist, and the Spirit descended on him like a dove, and a voice came from heaven. You are my Son, whom I love. With you I am well pleased. Jesus healed many people. He healed a lady with fever, a man with leprosy, a paralyzed man, a man with a shriveled hand, a woman who'd been subject to bleeding for 12 years. He raised a girl from the dead, made a deaf man hear, and Mark claims that he healed many more people beside this that he doesn't mention in detail. He also drove out impure spirits or demons, taught with authority, claimed to forgive sins, confronted the religious leaders, attracted large crowds wherever he went, calmed a storm just by speaking, attracted the attention of the king of the land, fed 5,000 people from five loaves and two fish, walked on water, fed 4,000 people from seven loaves and a few small fish. And then we come to today's passage, where after all that's already happened, we see two responses to him, both of which are shocking. Let's just have a look at them both in turn. Firstly, we see that the Pharisees, the religious leaders, asked Jesus for a sign from heaven to test Jesus. A sign from heaven. Clearly, all that Jesus had done already wasn't convincing enough for them. They wanted confirmation straight from the top. And the language suggests that they weren't asking for him to perform another miracle, but that they're asking for a supernatural sign directly from God. In a way, it doesn't sound unreasonable. If Jesus was the Son of God, if he was who he claimed to be, then surely he could do that. He could make the call. Show us, Jesus, who you are, and then we'll believe in you. But a genuine desire for evidence is not what Jesus is disappointed about, is not what the Pharisees are asking for. The problem was that they had already made up their mind about who Jesus was, and Jesus knew it. They were convinced in their minds that he was doing his miracles in the power of Satan, the devil. They saw the miracles with their physical eyes, but as one commentator puts it, they are unwilling to see that the exorcisms, the healings, and nature miracles of Jesus are signs that he is the Christ, the Son of God. Are any of us like this today? I would believe in Jesus if God did something amazing to prove it. I can't believe in Jesus because I've never seen any miracles firsthand. How does Jesus respond to the Pharisees? He turns around and leaves. He refuses to give them a sign. But not without an inward groaning, an expression of dismay or despair. After all you have seen, how can you still not believe? Have we consistently rejected Jesus in light of all the evidence we've seen? Have we been quick to believe hearsay or rumours about him without investigating the facts, looking into it for ourselves? This is a serious warning that should cause us to wake up. We shouldn't wait for some great revelation from heaven. What we have here is enough, and that's all we're going to get. What we see about Jesus is enough. But we have to be willing to engage with what it says and be willing to leave our prejudices behind us. Let's see another response to Jesus in our passage. The second response we see is from the disciples, the 12 men who've been following Jesus closely since he started his public ministry, so for about the last 3 years. And we see that's an almost comical conversation in the boat, as Jesus warns the disciples against the unbelief of the Pharisees and of Herod. The word suggests Jesus is giving them quite a strong warning. He was trying to tell the disciples that there is real danger. You need to watch out. You must start to understand who I am. And that understanding must grow into faith. Alternatively, if you fail to understand, I just become another man, and you'll end up rejecting me completely, just like the Pharisees have done. Jesus uses the word yeast or leaven, something to pick a picture of something that starts really small, but over time gradually and slowly works its way throughout the whole dough until it affects the whole. Just like the weeds in my garden. And the disciples completely miss the point of what Jesus is trying to tell them, which ironically means that they needed to hear that warning. It was as if they had their eyes closed and their fingers in their ears. They thought he was talking about their lack of bread. Why are you talking about having no bread? Do you still not see or understand? Are your hearts hardened? Do you have eyes but fail to see, and ears but fail to hear? And don't you remember, when I broke the 5 loaves for the 5,000, how many basketfuls of pieces did you pick up? 12, they replied. And when I broke the 7 loaves for the 4,000, how many basketfuls did you pick up? 7. And he said to them, do you still not understand? Probably just like the Pharisees, the disciples have remembered the raw facts of the miracles that they'd just seen. But Jesus asks them, well, what did you understand from it? Clearly Jesus did them and intended them to understand something from them, deeper than just, I have some food to eat. They had a point, and that point they should have remembered. They should have understood from the miracles, as a bare minimum, that Jesus can provide lots and lots of bread from not very much bread. So therefore, when he was talking about yeast, he was probably talking about something else other than their lack of bread. These searching questions from Jesus must have provoked the disciples to do some soul searching. Do I really see who Jesus is and understand what he's doing? Is my heart hardened? Am I really listening to him? Do I remember what he has taught me? It strikes me that those are really good questions for us to ask regularly of ourselves and of each other. Do I really see who Jesus is and understand what he's doing? Is my heart hardened? Am I really listening to him? Do I remember what he has taught me? Can we be so fixated on our immediate needs that we don't listen to Jesus and don't understand the implications of what he's done? Are we so concerned about what I'm having for dinner, that project at work, sorting out my car insurance, getting those house jobs sorted out, that we forget that there is a war raging, that there are real and genuine dangers all around us? What's worse, do we seem powerless to change? Can I just not help myself from focusing on the here and now and just ignoring and not listening to Jesus? Why is it so hard listening to sermons? Why is it so hard reading the Bible? Even if I do manage to listen, do I find myself desperately trying to look for a superficial meaning and not engaging with the core message? If someone asks you, what did you get out of the sermon this morning? Do you find you can tell them, I can remember what the passage was, and I remember that story that the preacher told, and one of the points that he told, one of the three points that there was, but I've completely missed the life-changing, the core message that the preacher probably said over and over again. Or is that just me? What hope is there? The religious leaders of the day failed to understand who Jesus is. Those who knew their Old Testament thoroughly, go-to people for religious teaching and counselling. And the disciples, Jesus' hand-picked group of followers, who'd seen firsthand all of the miracles that he'd done, those who'd been mentored by him for the last 3 years, they completely failed to understand the most basic things Jesus was trying to tell them. So what hope is there for us? Can your biblical knowledge match that of the Pharisees? Can your first-hand experience of Jesus match that of the disciples? If they failed to see, then what chance do we have? We have much less chance, and we're kidding ourselves if we think any differently. So are we condemned to be ever seeing but never perceiving, and ever hearing but never understanding? Then we read, they came to Bethsaida, and some people brought a blind man and begged Jesus to touch him. He took the blind man by the hand and led him outside the village. When he had spat on the man's eyes and put his hands on him, Jesus asked, do you see anything? He looked up and said, I see people. They look like trees walking around. Once more, Jesus put his hands on the man's eyes. Then his eyes were opened, his sight was restored, and he saw everything clearly. The problem is that we, just like the Pharisees and the disciples, are by nature spiritually blind. But our hope is that Jesus makes blind people see. Now, the blind man in this story had one thing going for him. He knew that he was blind. He didn't need anybody to tell him he is blind. And what's more, he probably knew that there was nothing that he could do to make himself see. Then one day, this blind man hears that Jesus is in town. He wouldn't know everything about Jesus, but he must have heard something about him. Maybe people have told him about the miracles that he's done. Maybe people have told him about some of the things he's been teaching. What he does know about Jesus convinces him to go to him. So some people take him to Jesus and beg Jesus to touch him. Then in this little story, we see some wonderful details about how Jesus treats this man so gently and lovingly. If you're blind, I'm sure it's quite reassuring for someone to touch you, so that you know that they are there. And Jesus didn't ask others to touch him and bring him. He personally led this blind man by the hand and led him out of the village. He then laid his hands on him and healed him of his blindness. Now this is the only healing in all of the accounts of Jesus' life where the person is not healed immediately. The first time Jesus touched the man, he could see, but not perfectly. It's only when Jesus touches him again that he sees clearly. It doesn't indicate that Jesus is somehow struggling to heal him. The first touch wasn't quite firm enough. But rather, he's making a point. There's some reason for him doing it in this way. And the other unique bit about this healing is that he asks, "Do you see anything?" Inviting a response. Just hold that thought. There was a purpose behind Jesus healing him gradually, and he asks the man for a response. Jesus and his disciples went on to the villages around Caesarea Philippi. On the way, he asked them, "Who do people say that I am?" They replied, "Some say John the Baptist, others say Elijah, still others, one of the prophets." "But what about you?" he asked. "Who do you say I am?" Peter answered, "You are the Messiah." The disciples have had a little bit of time to ponder and mull over those harsh questions that Jesus was asking them in the boat. Then Jesus asks them, "Who do people say I am?" Jesus obviously knows that people have been talking about him. People have been seeing all the miracles, and they're struggling to figure out, well, who is he? So other people think he's, even the king of the land, Herod, has been pondering, who is Jesus, and coming up with his own conclusions. Now the time has come. Jesus demands a response. Other people think he's a great person. You know, being compared with John the Baptist, Elijah, or the prophets was an honour. Those people were well regarded. But then Jesus makes the question much more personal. Who do you say I am? Answering on behalf of the disciples, Peter says, "You are the Messiah." And the Messiah, it's the same word, Christ, Jesus, the Messiah, Jesus Christ. And the Messiah would have been understood by the men as being a king sent by God. Peter sees a glimpse of who Jesus is, but only partially. He didn't see and understand fully. Immediately after this, Jesus tells the disciples he must suffer, be rejected, and killed. But 3 days later, rise again. Peter, the same man who just said, "You are the Messiah," then tells Jesus, "I'm not going to tolerate this talk. You may be the Messiah, Jesus, but I don't think you understand exactly what the Messiah is supposed to do. He's supposed to lead us to victory against our enemies, not suffer, be rejected, and die." And this turn earned Peter a sharp telling off from Jesus. "We don't find a rebuke stronger than this. Get behind me, Satan," Jesus says to Peter. "You do not have in mind the concerns of God, but merely human concerns." Peter saw that Jesus is the Messiah, but he didn't understand fully what that meant. Jesus was going to defeat a powerful enemy, but he didn't understand that the greatest enemy was not the Romans, but sin. And going to the cross was God's way of defeating that enemy. It seems that Mark was using the physical healing of the blind man as a picture of Jesus' ability to heal us of our spiritual blindness. Just as the man's sight was restored gradually, so our perception and understanding of who Jesus is and the implications of that come to us gradually. You might not yet see everything clearly. You may still have lots of questions. Things may not seem to make sense. This is normal, and we must be kind and humble and patient with one another, because all of us only see partially. And this teaches us that it's not being really clever that we know more about Jesus. It's about him opening our eyes, which is a gradual process. And we need to keep coming back to him to have our eyes opened. So just to close. See, how we answer Jesus' question, "Who do you say I am?" has massive implications for us. We could either answer, maybe he's a great person, you know, he's an influential thinker, you know, he's an example to us of sacrifice on behalf of others. Maybe he's just an irrelevant person, irrelevant historical character. Maybe he's a fraud, a liar, someone I can just take him or leave him. Well, if we say those things, that puts us in a dangerous place. You see, it's tempting to look at Jesus' question and look at it as if he's in the dock and we're the ones passing judgment on him. It's our opinion that it's important as to who we say he is. Whereas the Bible as a whole paints quite a different picture. It presents Jesus to us as God's King, who has ultimate power and authority. So that changes the question to, well, are our eyes open to see him for who he really is? And are we going to submit to him as the King or not? And it says it's foolish to rebel against God's King. But if we answer, like the disciples, that Jesus, I believe you are the Messiah, that also has implications for us. Listen to just a few verses on in verse 34. Whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. For whoever wants to save their life will lose it. But whoever loses their life for me and the gospel will save it. Jesus wasn't quite the Messiah, the King that Peter had in mind. Following Jesus requires a complete transformation of life and a willingness to follow him, even if that means suffering, ridicule, contempt, and just outright opposition. What would motivate anyone to do that? What if we see something of Jesus, not as a little baby in a manger, not as just any old man, but as the glorious Son of God, then we'll begin to understand. Can I urge you to come to Jesus as you are and accept him for who he is? Finding out more is great. We'd encourage you to do so. Please read the Gospels for yourself. Join a group where you can study the Bible and ask questions. Loads of people found that really helpful. But ultimately, we'll have to make a decision. Our knowledge will be imperfect. We won't have all the answers. But we have to take what we do know and make a decision. We have to believe he is who he says he is. Ask him to accept us as we are and follow him. Let's pray together. If you've been challenged by anything that's been said this morning, then please talk to God in prayer. God, I know that I'm blind and can't see Jesus for who he really is. Forgive me for wrong thoughts about you, for turning away from you. But I want to see. I want to see Jesus for who he really is. Please reveal him to me. Open my eyes, unblock my ears, and let me respond by following him all of my life. Amen.